in Babylon we roam.
And as always, a big warm aloha. Welcome into the Tiki Lounge Remix. My name is Seth Jordan, the proprietor of this musical audio establishment and the DJ in the lounge here. Your table is ready for you, as always, right over here next to the bandstand. Kitchen's open, bar's running. Enjoy your stay here in the Tiki Lounge. Now, in this first hour of the program, we've got a very, very special guest, Mr. Nick Page from England. Also known as Dubula, musician, producer extraordinaire. And if you don't think you know the name Nick Page, you probably do know some of his projects. He was one of the founders of the great band back in the 90s called Trans Global Underground, and went on to many, many other projects since then. So we're going to be taking up this first hour with an in-depth chat with Nick Page. Very interesting guy, and listening to some of the music over his very long career, including the brand new album out called Terraforming in Analog Space, remixes from the IRL label. So to start things off, we're going to be listening to a track that goes all the way back to 1991 and the very beginning of Trans Global Underground. It was included on their debut album called Dream of 100 Nations. This is The Templehead here in the Tiki Lounge Remix.
Now, coming from a different hemisphere, we bring you global music.
So now or no, it's time to react and make a pact between the white and the black.
think about the road you take and the record you make. We can all get an equal slice of the cake and create a perfect world for every nation. To pass it down to the next generation, it's not impossible for us to get that far. All we gotta do is change the way we are. So stop chasing that fast car with the ball. I love to say peace and nah, nah, nah.
Going way back to the early 90s with the original Transglobal Underground from the album Dream of a Hundred Nations, the Templehead, and that was also included on a best-of compilation called Run, Devils, and Demons, Transglobal Underground, all through the years. And Nick Page was a founder of Transglobal Underground way back when there in the early 90s. He's a writer, producer, guitarist, bass player, remixer, editor, programmer, all sorts of things. He's worked with an enormous number of notable artists and eccentrics, with a million albums sold that he's been part of, tours worldwide, and over 200 compilation CD placements. He's been involved with cross-cultural music scene for many, many years on many chart albums and some wildly improbable projects. Aside from Transglobal Underground, he went on to form and found the band Temple of Sound for a few years. He worked with Transglobal Underground's lead vocalist Natasha Atlas on her own records and was the producer of four of her albums. He's also worked with people like Jaw Wobble, Ladysmith Black Mambazo, Loop Guru, the Reggae Philharmonic Orchestra, Fundamental, and the Tom Tom Club. His most recent projects have included the Ethiopian Jamaican dub group called Dub Colossus, a wonderful album he put out called Syriana, including Syrian musicians. Most recently, the group Chaos, spelled with an X, X-A-O-S, Chaos, which explores the electronic side of Greek music. And Nick does come from a half-Greek background. His mother was Greek. And the most recent release is called Terraforming in Analog Space. This is remixes from the label IRL over a long, long period of time that Nick has overseen. And Nick Page is our special guest from a hotel room in the south of Spain, a very hot hotel room, and you can hear the buzzing from the electricity and the heat that's being generated there from the fans. And we invited Nick into the Tiki Lounge Remix. On the line from the south of Spain, Mr. Nick Page, a.k.a. Dubulo. Welcome to the program, Nick.
Yeah, nice to be here, man. Welcome to you in Spain.
Yeah.
Or from Spain, I should say.
Nick, you always have so many different projects going, and you always have going way, way back. Can we go back in time here just a little bit to start off with? I want to go back to the early 1990s. It's a long time ago now, I know. Transglobal Underground times, you were one of the founders of that group. What was the impetus for you guys getting together at that time? What did you want to do with this group? What was the original idea?
The original idea of Transglobal Underground was to try and enjoy making music that no one else was making, that we would buy and go and see live. At the time, there were several things we were all collectively excited by and individually, but there was no one making this combination of styles and sounds and approaches. So I think on top of that, Mantu and Alex Kasiak had been in Furniture, who were an English left field pop group, and I'd been working in a group as well, and we both had fairly unpleasant experiences with major labels. So I think we wanted to do something that was enjoyable, but there was also something we couldn't find that anyone else was actually making. So, you know, we were influenced by things like Jar Wobble's Without Judgment album and The Art of Noise and Feruz, the Lebanese singer, and Lee Perry and, oh, I don't know, all sorts of things. The Young Gods, in my case, I was very influenced by, because they use samplers and they'd sample anything to make their music. So, yeah, that was kind of a real mashup. Oh, Public Enemy, that was the other thing we were influenced by.
Yeah.
So you can imagine all of this together with, a balalaika orchestra here and a Lebanese singer there and Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. You know, I mean, the idea was, The Passion Sources by Peter Gabriel was very big for us as well. That was an influential record.
Yeah.
The idea was to just combine everything and make a new take. To be honest, it was for fun. We wanted to have a master plan, but we weren't very good at it. So what we did was have fun and then tell everyone we'd had a master plan. That's the truth. It's as much by happy accident as design.
Yeah.
And then after that, we claimed to have thought it all through and come up with a load of concept.
In these days, of course, Nick, we take these multicultural mashups for granted. But again, going back to the early 90s, this was kind of reasonably revolutionary at the time, wasn't it? To be putting different cultures together, throwing electronics in there as well. It wasn't being done too much.
Well, it had been done in the world of jazz in the 60s quite a lot. In fact, in pop in the 60s quite a lot. In the 70s, it kind of continued, but not so strongly. I mean, Joe Harriott and Sonny Rollins Ravi Shankar with George Harrison. There were a lot of people doing crossover, but the kind of fusion crossover that involved... I tell you what it was. It was, for us, it was that we couldn't afford to work with world music artists, but we could afford to sample them and hope no one had noticed if we changed everything, And it was the only way we were going to make... So we had the kind of notionally, it was, if Public Enemy can sample James Brown and a load of other funky things that are really good and make something good, then it's kind of acknowledging the past but bringing something new from the present and hopefully making something different for the future. And I think that's what we wanted to do, is just those elements, really.
Yeah.
That was what Transglobal was all about, and the name was supposed to reflect that. It was supposed to be a broad, ambiguous name that encompassed everything and anything.
And you guys stayed reasonably incognito too, didn't you? You were wearing masks, I recall, in the early days.
The masks came about because we decided we were too old even then to appear in public. And also we had no desire to talk to anyone about pop music and ideas. So it was more fun to come up with a kind of identity. That was all nicked from The Residents, really, and the fact that they used masks in a really creative and amusing way.
Yeah.
And quite satirical.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know, if you've ever been on stage in a mask, it's quite liberating because you forget who you're supposed to be and how you're supposed to act.
Be hot too, wouldn't it?
Incredibly hot. You couldn't hear very much at all. It was a bit like having a fiberglass cobbled box on your head. Yeah. It wasn't easy, but it looked good,
It looked
got us out of the problem of whether we looked young, healthy, and sexy or not, because we were, in fact, the god of Shiva, and the other one I never figured out. Two of them were Shiva, though.
Yeah.
And Shiva the Destroyer, ironically.
And probably the only one who didn't wear a mask in those days was your regular special guest, Natasha Atlas.
Was indeed.
And you've had a long collaboration with her, which continues today. How many albums of hers have you produced now?
Transglobal did several with her. I mean, I worked on the first two albums with her, and she was on the first three Transglobal albums as well.
Yeah.
And then I did Mishmaul, was the last one I did, I think 2006. But I'm working on a new album with her and Sami Bishai, the violinist.
Yes.
Hopefully out end of next year. Everything's been delayed that I've been doing for various reasons by about a year and a half. So it was outside my control. So I'm back into that. But I'm really enjoying writing that stuff, and that's going to be a great album. I hope it is. I'm enjoying it immensely. She's quite keen and excited, and so Sammy. So between the three of us, it should be really good fun.
Thank you. share a home and grow within a globe. On every street is a universe. Now try to picture the reverse. A starlit highway, a trip to busy Broadway, tripping out a pooper on the super duper highway.
At the end of the 90s, you had the Temple of Sound group, which came out here to Australia. I remember you guys playing at Warm Adelaide one year, and that was with another Transglobal alumni, Neil Sparks. What did you want to do different? At that point, of course, Transglobal, you'd kind of gone in two different directions. What did you guys want to do different from what the Underground had done?
Well, I mean, so I'd left Transglobal Underground. I couldn't do Transglobal Underground 2 because, I mean, you know, they were still doing it. Fairness to them, you know, we'd come up with a name. Alex Cassier, well, Tim Hammy and myself were effectively the band, and then Natasha and Neil were the regulars, and Toop, the three, Larry Whelan as well. But there were a lot of people who ended up, Dave Coleridge as well. It's got complicated. They were still gigging and they were still working, so obviously there was no point in being Transglobal on Underground Part 2. So we decided to go back to the more urban, punky, big beaty, anarchic punk rock side of it, really. I don't know if it worked, but at times it worked very well. And at other times, I think we disappeared up our own artistic endeavour. But I did enjoy it, Temple of Sound, immensely. But I think it was a bit brash for a lot of people, and it wasn't literally enough for them on the world music side. But we did quite a lot of good collaborations. We had a good time. Global Head was my favourite album, which was the last one that nobody really heard because it didn't get a proper release. So
I've got a copy.
Good man, but you must be the only person
I'm the one who bought it, mate.
I liked that album immensely, but nobody really knew about that. I thought that was our best album, first edition and that one.
with Nick W. Page on guitars, bass, keyboards, programming, a lot of other things as well. That's the group Temple of Sound and the title track from their 2007 album called Global Head. And before that, you heard Transglobal Underground featuring Natasha Atlas, who was also on that track just now, the track Chariots from the 96 album Psychic Karaoke. And Nick Page is our special guest this week here in the Tiki Lounge Remix. In more recent years, of course, you've been working with the Dub Colossus collaboration, and that came out here to Australia, too. And I remember heading over to New Zealand with you guys, too, after WOM Adelaide one year and having a good play over there. And that, of course, featured all the great Ethiopian musicians. How did that project come about for you, Nick? Where did you first hear all this Ethiopian music?
Fire Ethiopia, so I have to confess, there was a record shop in called Stearns. It was near Warren Street, actually. It was actually next to Warren Street Tube Station, the underground metro station. And I went in there and I'd heard something for some reason. I asked to listen to some of the Ethiopia series, and I listened to about six CDs, and then I bought four of them. Got very excited because I felt a real connection with Ethiopian music. It was like the missing link between Africa and the Middle East that I'd always kind of hoped what I'd hear. I think Yemeni music's got elements of that as well, but Ethiopia was such a unique combination of African pentatonic modes with stuff that I recognised from Greek music, you know, and Middle Eastern music as well. So that's what it was. That's what got me excited. And then, it gets a bit weird here, but I asked the guy who did all the Ethiopiques records, which is Francis Falsetto, if I could sample one of his tracks and credit the artist as a writer, and he gave permission, and we did it all officiously, which was great. And then a guy called Dan Harper got in touch because he heard that I was doing stuff, and he invited me to I asked him to replace a sample. It goes on and on, but Dan Harper actually then said, why don't you come out to Ethiopia and meet a load of musicians? And I had been working on a lot of stuff, and so I've been working with samples. I thought it'd be better to go and work with real musicians, and he introduced me to them. And then the musicians themselves introduced me to even more Ethiopian musicians.
Mm-hmm.
So Dan Harper's invite was very important. So, yeah, I mean, sorry, that's a really long answer.
That's all right.
And the truth, though.
And those two women who fronted it as singers, they were really remarkable and had very different styles, but it just worked fabulously on stage, didn't it?
For me, it did, yeah. You have to bear in mind that the band was put together, people who sort of knew each other but had never worked together on stage, really, except for Feleke and Sammy. Feleke was Sammy's tutor at the Yaret School of Music in Addis.
Yeah.
But Sedenius, a pop star in Ethiopia, and still is, just finished a new album, apparently, and Sammy's making an album very slowly, I think. Mimi, Sintayu is a neighbor, as she's properly known. Mimi now lives in Canada.
Okay.
So she's left Ethiopia. Yeah, I think her family's out with her. And I think at some point I'll be doing something with Mimi again, but she's in Canada. The major problem, the reason I'm not working with them, if anyone wants to know, is immigration problems, visa problems, and the fact that no festivals want to pay anything for musicians to travel.
Yeah.
So if they're not EU passport holders, it's getting more and more difficult to work with anyone. In fact, it's nigh on impossible. I think that's really affected the quality of what happens with the collaborations, personally. It's really depressing, but anyway, that's something people ought to be aware of.
And is that why the last Dub Colossus album went more in a Jamaican reggae direction rather than holding steady to the Ethiopian material?
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's partly true, because I couldn't afford to get everyone across, and no one was willing to fund it. As the project was always a combination of kind of UK Jamaican meets Ethiopian, thought, well, I might as well concentrate on what I can actually make work, what, you know, bring into existence, because I certainly couldn't do the other side of it. It was very sad, but I thought, well, rather than take it as a weakness, we'll go with the strength of it and go to the other side, because from my point of view, the London Jamaican axis was just as important, part of what I grew up with. It's certainly influential, but in terms of the Ethiopian crossover, I couldn't afford to do it.
Yeah.
And no one was prepared to finance it, and I'd lost a huge amount of money. But I'd had a very successful, you know, we did good sales and stuff, but it just wasn't enough. I'm saying all this so that I hope that your listeners understand that there's a kind of pragmatic reality,
yeah,
that kind of underpins all of these projects. And there are times when you can make it work and you're willing to lose everything. And there's a time when you've got nothing left to lose.
Yeah, musically it's successful, but practically it's a nightmare.
yeah, I don't regret anything, but I remember for a long time ago talking to Joe Wobb, and he went, well, you know, I managed to get a certain amount of it to work, you know, on one of my projects, he said to me, as a promotional thing, but past that, there's no point, because A, I can't afford to do it anymore, B, it's a bloody nightmare with the visas, and I was sitting there saying, well, what does this mean for the future? For people like us who want to work with musicians from all around the world, you know, it's really difficult now.
And what's the state of the band Dub Colossus these days? Are you still taking on gigs and performing?
Well, I turned down some festivals this year because I wasn't able to actually do them. But also, I think there'll be the new Dub album out next year. So I think it'd be better to do it all next year. That's my take on it.
And keep it to UK-based performers, yeah?
Not through choice entirely, but I mean, how do I do it?
Yeah.
If Nini's in Canada, she's actually more... it's actually cheaper to get her from Canada to the UK and Europe than it is from Ethiopia to the UK and Europe. And there are no guarantor problems, and there are no visa problems, and there are no work permit problems.
Speaking of practicalities, in 2010 you had the Syriana project and that wonderful album, yeah. Road to Damascus, and I believe you've got a new release coming out on Real World around that Syriana name?
Yeah, that's right. Well, we're playing with the Greek project Chaos at WOMAD, and the Chaos album came out a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And because we're doing the Greek project at WOMAD this year in the Siam tent on Friday the 28th of July, I think, it was supposed to do it last year, it had to be postponed. But because we're doing it this year, we decided, between Bernard and myself, try and retake one of the tracks that only ever came out on vinyl that wasn't on the album, do a series of remixes and try and put it out as an awareness-making release with Real World, and they were very happy to get involved and to do that. And it's about the Greek-Syrian connection, which is there are a hell of a lot of Syrians stuck in Greece, in basically prison camps, because Europe has decided not to let them move, and the Greek people, with no money and a financial crisis, generally have been keeping them alive. I mean, there are some evil criminal forces in Greece, but the people generally have actually given what little they have, and it's not a lot, to keep the Syrian refugees alive.
Mm.
So I think we need to raise awareness that Europe, because it's in the middle of elections, French, German and otherwise, and Brexit nightmares, it has decided to ignore all of the refugees that are now stranded in Greece, that Turkey sent there. Of course, Turkey has a lot of Syrian refugees as well, in honesty.
Yeah.
Which it's also having to fund and support, and does get funding from Europe for that. But Greece, which is in a total crisis, is having to somehow keep people alive. And in the conditions of the camps in Greece, no matter how good the Greek people generally have been, it's not a good situation, because the Greeks have nothing. And there's nothing to offer, and none of the money's coming through, and a lot of the money from Europe never arrived, and what did arrive disappeared, some of it. So we thought we'd do a kind of awareness-raising fundraiser, and I hope all monies from that release, any monies from that release, will go via, I think, hopefully via the Peter Gabriel and the Elders, you know, the Elders organisation. We're hoping it's all going to go straight. Well, we're going to make sure it all goes to any funding bodies that help, any NGOs that help looking after of the refugees. But it's the least we can do, and I don't know if it's going to raise much, but at least try and raise awareness of the fact there's hundreds of thousands of people stuck in Greece.
Yeah, and if you thought that getting visas for Ethiopians was difficult, getting them for Syrians would be incredibly impossible, wouldn't it?
Well, I can't get Syrian music. Well, we couldn't get Syrian musicians out of Syria because I couldn't get work permits anyway, and they actually told us that. All the musicians we work with in Syria, we had a dinner where we all sat down and discussed this at some length, and we said, how would you like to come and work with us and do a collaboration? And they said, well, we'd love to, but we'll never get out.
Yeah.
That was before the war, mind you.
Yeah.
And now half those guys are probably in Lebanon, and the rest, if they're still in Syria, I dread to think. I've lost touch with a lot of people. It's nigh impossible to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
And you don't want to get them into trouble with the Syrian government by talking to them, and then they're considered rebels. So, I mean, you know, it is really complicated. Again, nobody talks about all these things, but these are the things people ought to understand in the world music crowd and the world music audience. It's life and death.
Yeah.
It's not a joke. It's not a drama. It's not about making £5 here, or, you know, making any money, or trying to make a music project. You can't cause anyone any problems by discussing them in any serious way. It's life and death out there. And it's a terrible situation in Syria. Terrible. It really has to end. It's got to stop. But between the superpowers and Saudi and Iran and Russia and America, I see no evidence for anyone wanting it to stop in any hurry.
Mm. It's not in anyone's interest, really, other than the people themselves.
Well, it's a geopolitical proxy war, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. the title track, Road to Damascus, from the collaborative album Syriana, with production, programming, and a bunch of Western instruments in there too, from our special guest here in the Tiki Lounge today, Nick W. LePage. Nick, you were mentioning the Chaos group there, and you're performing at WOMAD. This was one close to heart, this project, wasn't it? Because you have, half Greek heritage. Your mother's Greek, yeah?
Yeah, my mother's Greek, from the island of Poros. So she was a political refugee in Sweden as a 9-year-old girl. Got out of Greece in the Greek Civil War, and so she grew up in Sweden. So my interest in kind of immigration, and it's very close to my heart. I love Greece. The Greek side is very strong. But it took me 10 years to make this album with my co-conspirator, Hethas Jimmy, who is Greek, but was born in Australia. I think he was born in Melbourne and then moved to Sydney, or Sydney and then moved to Melbourne. But I think it's Melbourne and then moved to Sydney.
Yeah, it's a big, very big Greek community in Melbourne.
Exactly. And then he got back to Greece when he was about 6-7 years old, and it was in pieces, really, in the late 50s. It wasn't like ancient Greece at all, which is what his dad had told him it would be like when they got back. Yeah, that was a bit of a shock. So it's very close to my heart. I've really enjoyed making it. It's incredibly difficult. Greek music's not really respected within Greece except in little cliques, and there's no state funding for it. And most good Greek musicians leave Greece and go abroad to study. They go to Istanbul, they go to Europe, they go to America. But we wanted to try and put something back and show people an alternative side of Greece, an alternative sound, an alternative aspect of the culture that's been ignored completely, really, by everyone. You know, if you say to someone, what's the music of Greece? They say,
Zorba.
Bouzouki, Never on a Sunday, and Zorba. Yeah.
That's about all that's known further on, yeah.
Right. Well, Katsenzakis was a great writer. Nikos Katsenzakis was a fabulous writer, and he was world-renowned. But it's not all that Greece has to offer. There's 5,000 years of musical and artistic culture, and it's not just ancient Greece. It's been going on the whole time. We wanted to try and reflect what's there now, and maybe hopefully show people that, you know, okay, it's a kind of an avant-garde take on it, but there needs to be that. Greece has huge, supreme talent, but who's ever going to get a chance to hear it? And the Greek collaborations, well, they're few and far between. There's Savina Yannatou. Savina Yannatou is probably the best artist from Greece for me. She makes albums on ECM.
Yeah.
Kind of rests my case, really.
But the Chaos album got really good reviews internationally, didn't it? Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I was completely and utterly surprised, because it's really not a very commercial album. But it's a very beautiful album, and it has a very high quality level in terms of the performances. But that was what the album was supposed to be about, to show people an alternative. So you have Mateos and Konstantinos doing the Pontic lyra and the Pontic singing at Sauridis, you know, the Sauridis brothers. And they're just fabulous, but they spend their whole time traveling around the world gigging. That's what they do. But they do a lot of gigging outside of Greece. And then you have people like Manos Achalinotopoulos, who's got the longest name in the world, who's like one of the best clarino players on the planet, if not the best. And George Makris on bagpipes, and Yorgos Kalaitzoglou on double bass. We'll have a selection of those musicians at WOMAD, but again, very difficult to get them out of Greece right now.
Yeah, and that's the WOMAD in UK that you're going to be performing in this coming Northern Hemisphere summer. Any chance of getting the Chaos group down here to Australia and New Zealand for the WOMADs down here maybe next year?
I would love to. Really, it would be a high point of my life to do that. But also because Hethas Jimmy was born in Australia.
Yeah.
It would be a really interesting combination. And maybe to do some sort of collaboration with an Australian artist as well, especially from the Greek community.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some great artists in Australia. Again, you know, it's the diaspora. The Greek diaspora is the kind of hope for the future for me. It's the means by which Greek cultural identities, ideas, and so on will be represented and sent back to Greece. Because Greece itself is a very small country with very little power, run by a very small number of people. I'd love to get there, man. I'd love to get there.
Are you familiar with Zalouris White down here in Australia, that group?
Yeah, Zalouris, yeah.
Well,
he's great.
They just performed at this last WOMAD in March down here, and that was really interesting, with Jim White from the Dirty Three.
From the Dirty Three, yeah, which basically is like the Bad Seeds, really, with a load of Rebetiko music and blues.
That's it.
I would imagine that's the combination, and I've heard some, and that's what it sounds like to me. Well, that's fabulous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Says it all, really. It sums it all up. I mean, you know, I'm half Greek, but I never wanted to try and be a pure Greek artist because I'm not one. I am what I am. I'm a product of my various cultural affiliations and connections and birthrights. And I think a real artist has to be honest about who they are and what they are and not pretend to be what they're not. So, I mean, you know, I've got the fusion thing for real because that's what I grew up with. So, yeah, love it. Love all the stuff going on there. Solaris White is a good example.
Talking fusion projects, Nick, finally, this new album, Terraforming in Analog Space, which was the reason why I got in touch with you in the first place to do this interview. This is a very interesting remix album, isn't it? And then it highlights your long connection with the IRL label over there.
Sure.
Where did this idea come from? Was it your impetus or the labels?
Well, I put it, it was my idea, really. The reason that I put the idea to them and they had to think about it and decided it might be a good idea, and then they got behind it 100%. But the reason for that was I thought just a very underrated label, really. The people who were involved in RL have worked with, you know, with Wobble, with Sinead O'Connor, with all sorts of people. Tanarawin's first album came via Justin as well. But they're a very underrated label, and I thought they had such a great back catalogue, you know, why not represent it and then include the originals, which was Robin Denslow's idea, actually. That wasn't my idea at all. And that, what a smart move that was, because for people who like the pure world music side of things, it was a great compilation album. For people who like remixes and fusion, you had the remixes. I put it to them. They got excited by it, and it took, again, that took 2 years. A lot of the time, there were no masters to work from, so that got a bit complicated. A lot of the time, there were some masters. But I'm really glad you like it, because I really enjoyed that album. I think mainly that was a very successful project. But it's a label that deserves recognition and consideration. Because without them, I don't think Tanarawin would really have hit the world stage. Neither would Terracat, the Malawi Mouse Boys, you know, Justin, who's, you know, Robert Plant's MD now, doing a lot of work with him live. You know, all these great people. Lunar Drive, Transglobal, obviously, you know, Chaos Dub Colossus, we're there because we released on the label. And then, you know, a Greek hip-hop remixer, for instance. There aren't many of them doing work outside of Greece.
No, there are not. And it's really been getting, again, quite phenomenal reviews all around the world, hasn't it?
Yeah, and it's still doing so, and it's very nice on vinyl. I'm very happy about the vinyl release on it, you know. If you're a DJ who likes playing vinyl, they're beautifully mastered by Mandy Parnell. Well, yeah, I mean, look, I'm really glad you like that album. I hope people in Australia find it a good introduction as well as a kind of way of looking at the two sides of this thing. But you know, world music is a living thing that evolves, and now with people like Songhai Blues and people like that, a lot of African bands are going into rock and indie rock in America, because they see that as their way forward, and dance music is no longer it. But dance music has got a lot to offer, really.
Nick Page, always good to catch up with you and your many, many projects. We look forward to the next ones coming out, and we'll keep our ears out for those.
Yeah, well, listen, and it's been a pleasure, and I'm sorry to give such long and convoluted answers, you know, but it's midnight here, and I'm excited about music still, and I can't keep me gob shut, so I do apologise. But hey, we've only got a short interview because my computer's about to overheat, which is another thing.
You're in the south of Spain. Turn that fan back on, Nick.
Yeah, exactly right, at which point you'll hear this horrible hum come up on the Skype.
Good to talk to you, Nick. Sounds once again of Dub Colossus from the new album Terraforming in Analog Space. A track called A Voice Has Power. It's the Incentici mix. A little while ago, you heard from the group Chaos with an X, X-A-O-S, the Greek one. Processional was that track from the self-titled Chaos album. And thanks to Nick Page for stopping into the Tiki Lounge this week. Tiki Lounge Remix is produced in the studios of 2BBB in Bellingen, New South Wales, and heard on stations all around the country thanks to the Community Radio Network. And the program is produced with the assistance of the Department of Communications via the Community Broadcasting Foundation. If your station is one of those that leaves us after the first hours, thanks for stopping in. Hope you can come back again next week and join in the remix. If you're sticking around, plenty of good music coming up in the second hour of the program.